Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone, welcome to Hellblazer Biz. This is Chris Gordon, your host as always, and today I have the proud honour and privilege of the company of Anna and Hilary Shakespeare, and also Scarlett Marshall, who stars in their latest film. So, welcome guys, thanks for joining me.
Thanks.
So obviously your latest film, which is a soundtrack to 16. It's a good film. I've watched it. Like I said to you before, I did watch it this afternoon and I did enjoy it. And which we'll talk about that as well, because it's very, very good at bringing home how some things were for yourselves, I think. And I'd like to find out whether that's what we're going to go into, because I looked at it and I was watching it and thinking, that really rings quite true from my memory of a lot of things there as well. So, it's great. So, first things first, I mean, where did you come up with the idea? Because obviously you guys wrote it, and Hilary, you wrote that film together. So where did you come up with the idea?
I was kind of on the bus, because like, you know, in the bus scene in the film, there's like a long bus scene which is kind of pivotal actually in it, and I was actually just on the bus listening to my iPod, and I was like, I don't know, for some reason I just found this song that really reminded me of when I was 16, and it really took me back, because I was like, I'm not even that much older than 16, but I had like just like a bit of a flashback, and then I was like, oh, it'd be cool to, I started putting together all the songs that reminded me of being 16 into playlists, and then I thought, oh, this really, I'd like labeled the playlist Soundtrack 16, and I thought, oh, that sounds kind of like a title for a film, I'd like to make a film about that, and then I guess the bus kind of still...
Yeah, because I think the title of the film came about before, like, the film was really formed, which was kind of weird around, but... I remember like Hilary coming home and being like, I want to make a film called Soundtrack 16. And I was like, cool, what's it about? And you're like, being 16. And then we kind of like, and then I just remember, you were kind of like, we could put this in, and then it kind of like took form a bit after that. But it started off all from that past journey.
Yeah, I guess I kind of had ideas for scenes, for things that kind of happened to us when we were 16 that I thought were funny, it would make good scenes. And then in a way it was kind of like building a story around that a little bit.
All right, cool. I was going to say, you saw that, I just changed the background as well. When I did look at the stories, I did wonder about that, whether you actually used some of your own personal experiences that you'd gone through to write some of those stories in there. Because they are very well done, and the actual is obviously it's a coming of age tale, but you do it for great from both sides. And as you were going, as you as well as self Scarlett were there, and your character, I've got to say that opening scene when you're doing that inner monologue, and you're walking, your facial expressions are absolutely perfect to match that, because you really get drawn straight into the character then, because you're just like, you know, running behind that behind him, they're like you know, when you suddenly see him, it's like shit. it's really, really good. So I kind of, that's why I was, any like personal experiences that you used to draw to sort of to write that for the film itself.
Yeah, I mean, all of it really is kind of drawn from either personal experiences or like friends' personal experiences. I mean, sometimes like they're extrapolated a bit, you know, and always like make this more dramatic.
Yeah,
than it
or
really
like
was.
What would happen if this had gone really wrong?
Yeah, I think. But I mean, particularly the scene where these like mean girls are really mean to Maisie when they have a sleepover and they like leave her out. Like that kind of happened to me. And they were like, I used to like you this much, now I like you this much. Someone said that to me once. So I just like really went down my memory. It's like quite a big thing. It seemed like how would, as an adult, no one surely would ever say that. Like, I used to like you this much and now I like you this much. Like, it's just so, it's like, not, doesn't even really, it just sounds stupid. But it's like when you're 16, I guess people do say that stuff, and that's kind of thing I wanted to get in, but like how teenagers act like that.
It's funny if you're reading like Hilary's diary from back then, because we're like currently working this TV show, sort of like semi-related about like 16-year-olds, and then we were always like, oh, it's good to go back into like the headspace. And we literally found the entry from when that had happened.
I drew a diagram for how much he liked me now, how much he liked me. And what was kind of funny is that, like, in the film, they're like, oh, for reference, we like each other that much. But in reality, she liked each other, like the other girl, less apparently than she used to like me. So I was like, it's strange that she even said that.
Yeah. That's pretty harsh.
It's like harsh to everyone here.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, that was a good scene. I mean, I saw that as well, and it was reflecting. So, from you, Scarlett, how did you feel playing sort of in that experience, in that role, in that scene in particular? Because it was quite.
It was actually sometimes kind of hard to remind myself that it wasn't me. Like, we'd spend all day on set, and I'd spend all day having people being horrible to me. And I'd go home and be like, it is fine, you do have friends. It's not you.
I think there was a day in particular where we were filming, like, so many sad scenes of you. It was, like, you eating sandwich over a bin.
It was when I ate sandwich over the bin.
Oh, gosh. I can imagine, yeah, it would be hard. Well, I mean, that's ranked. I mean, I've got... I mean, I'm 16 was, for me, almost 30 years ago. But it kind of... It was great because I think what... The good thing about this film is it'll bring it out in everybody. I think everyone, there's part of this, each part of this film, there's going to be experiences that everyone would have had going, you know, at that age. I think I can't remember sleepovers like that, but I do remember for boys, it was something different. We used to get beaten up instead. You know, I think the girls are very much more intellectually vindictive. If I can say that without being sound, I'm not sounding sexist. Yeah. I'm just saying, girls.
Yeah, it's like the girl version of beating you up. It's just
it's mentally. Yeah,
they mentally destroy you. Whereas for me, you know, I used to sit there and have to stay after school till 5 sometimes because it'd be like a gang of 20 or 5, 30 of them just waiting for me at the school gates.
Oh my God,
so you know, it does ring some little violin playing. Sorry,
but, you know, which I prefer really.
So it's kind of like, yeah, it is very much like that, and you can draw those experiences, and that's what I loved about this. One of the things that was part of the film was that was really funny, is the fact that you could actually draw back to your own experiences within it. Was that your kind of aim as well, was to try and get people to imagine that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it definitely was my aim when I was thinking about it. And Anna actually wasn't even that much up, because Anna had just finished school when we were shooting it, so... Quite a lot of the experiences that were happening to her were like very real for teenagers, because like she was literally still a teenager, so it was quite we were literally taking things her friends had just said and being like, oh, that's funny.
It's funny, like that's kind of the thing that people say most to us, like, oh, it really brought me back to being that age. And like, sometimes kind of in a negative way you're like, oh god, I didn't miss that. But then you're kind of like happy it's over. And then there's also like nice things as well. But like, first romances are quite fun.
Cool.
I find like being older now, I do actually look back on even the bad things like in a positive way. I'm like, oh, it's so cute that we were so horrible to each other in such a stupid way. But I don't know. Like, weirdly rose tinted even the bad stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I've got to that stage yet.
you're not old to go back and reminisce. Thankfully I didn't have my head flushed down the toilet that I can remember, but I know people who did. So that's the kind of era that I was in. It was great. I'll say it was great, it's not really. But you're right, you do look back on it, and when he's 16 as well, because it's when you do get to a certain age, you can look back and think that although you, at the time it was horrible and you went through all these experiences like Maisie does and Ben, they go through and they get that. But as you grow older, you do look back and think that was easy. You know, now you've got taxes, mortgage. it was the best time of your life, really. And seeing that and how it plays out on the screen with, I loved the fact that as Scarlett, as Daisy, there's that sense you're trying to get in with the big girl, the hip girls, the hip crowd. That's what it felt like. It was just like, well, you were moving kind of from place to place. You're ostracized, I think is the word. You felt yourself ostracized as a person. And again, that's very relatable because you couldn't, you're trying to find your identity, I think, and that's where, oh, sorry, that's where Maisie's trying to find her identity. How did you find that again? Because that's play, you're taking yourself back to being a 16-year-old girl as well, playing that. So again, how did you find being able to? How did you draw? What did you draw on to? Sorry.
No, I had some like similar-ish experiences at school. I think particularly early on, and girls do this a lot. You kind of move around different groups and. Yeah. Some end up being really popular and some less so until you settle into the nice group of slightly odd but wonderful people that you know you were meant to be part of anyway. So definitely school things I could draw on there.
excellent. I mean, I'll just say this as well. So that keeps bringing back to me, but I did see so much of myself in the characters. It was hilarious. It was like, yeah, that was me. I was like, not the loner, but I had friends, but there were the, you know, we weren't the cool kids.
Yeah.
But we've just got back together, with, especially in lockdown, with the university again. And I went to a very small university, but we were really close-knit. And the groups just kicked off. And it's immediate, but it's immediately separated out between, like, what I call the football jocks and the rugby jocks, and to the people who were, like, my group. And we've just – people I've not spoken to for 23 years have just, like, connected again, exactly like in the film. The whole purpose of the film, but you get to the end and you've – you know, you've been through all those various groups and stuff, but you finally find yourself, and Ben finds himself, and you've got your little group of friends, and it doesn't matter who you are in society, in that sort of, you know, society, they're your friends because you all gel, you all mix together, and you've all got that thing. And I've got to say, after 20, you know, we've just done that after 23 years, and it's like there's no time separated at all, because we were the geeks, basically,
yeah.
And the nerds. we came back together, and that was our little group. And it didn't matter that, you know, he had everybody else and this, that, and the other. You had that. That's at the very end. That's what I. Hopefully, that's the right meaning for the film. Is I took at the end of it was the fact you found yourself, you found your group, and it didn't matter if they were cool or not. It's cool to everybody else. Sorry, they were cool to you. Obviously.
It's funny because I feel like everyone I meet says that they were the nerdy group. Mine don't believe that everyone can be. Unless they just have very selective meetings of people.
Yeah.
Like, not wonder people even knew they were cool that were cool.
Yeah. I think everyone's got such low self-esteem as a teenager. Yeah. Even like the popular kids probably don't see themselves like that necessarily.
Yeah, maybe.
Very possible. I think my worst... Sorry, guys. I'm not a narcissist, by the way. I'm just so, I'm sure. I think the best one for me was when someone said to me, I've bumped into them from school, and they turned around and they, because in school I was very, you know, obviously I had that insecurity. I actually thought I was fat, I was ugly, no one liked me. And I was that. That's why I drew so much out of this film, because I was like that, I can sense that. And someone came to me, and for the first time they'd seen me in years. And sadly, obviously, a few stone have gone on since I was in school. I was quite slim at the time. They go, what happened to you? You were really good looking and really slim and all the girls liked you. And I was like, what? I was like, I didn't have a single girlfriend. Why didn't you tell me at the time? I said,
you know. You never know that stuff at the time, do you?
No, you know. So that's what I mean. I always thought I was the little nerd in the corner. And then, they were, you know, I find this out 30 years later. It's like, well, it's a bit late now, isn't it?
I don't know. I've definitely got some fairly incriminating teenage pictures that make me know I definitely wasn't.
Yeah, thankfully, I've got to say, I'm too old for mobile phones to have been around. So yeah, you've just aged me again, Scarlett. Thank you.
Actually, there was a scene in the film that I knew nothing about until we watched the film, because it was one of Gino's. But it's when he sat at a table and like waiting for his phone to buzz, and then someone else buzzes. But that scene I loved, because like that excitement when you're a teenager of getting a text from someone and being like, is it that person? What have they said in their 140 character limit that cost them 12p to send?
Yeah, it's quite nice how like back then, because like when you text someone it costs money, it's like quite obvious if you like someone, because you have to send them like a 30p text. Like, why are you spending all this money if you're not?
That's true. Having a real like text conversation really was quite a big deal then.
Yeah.
I know. And like, which text do you keep in your like inbox of 12 texts that you're allowed to?
So true.
See, I remember that, but that was university for me. For school, mobile phones weren't invented. Thank you. So, yeah. You really know how to make someone feel old. I'm sorry. But you know, you are right. That you get that buzz. When I started at uni, it was the same. You're getting the little buzz. Exactly. You've got 12 messages you can send compared to how many hundreds or thousands you can save in now. It's a massive difference to the feeling. So, Scott, what kind of drew you to the role then? Obviously, seeing when you read the script and everything, what drew you? What said this is for you?
I think there definitely are a lot of similarities between Maisie and my experience. And I think particularly at the time, I hadn't seen an awful lot that showed that. Mm-hmm. Particularly American teen movies, they're so glamorized. And even the uncool people like Lindsay Lohan and Mean Girls are like super cool. And aside from In Between Us, it was like quite rare to have. So I just really liked that there was something finally showing that experience that so many of us did have.
Cool. Yeah, you're right, because I think that it's definitely nice as well to have that from the British point of view, because the American ones, they're all in LA, they're all like you're right, just like Lindsay Lohan, regardless of whether she's meant to be playing someone ordinary at school like everyone else, no, it's not going to happen. I'm not saying that you're ordinary, Scarlett, because that's just maybe
you're not. It's fine, I'll just try and let you feel old again, if that's how we're going to play this.
I'm just getting my revenge then. But yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah, so it's great to have that from a British perspective, because the lifestyle of someone growing as a teen in Britain is a lot different to that growing, I think, in America, but there are obviously similarities too. So Hilary and Anne, you filmed this in London. Was there any reason why it was in London specifically, or is it just the fact that was for location I'm just thinking about?
I mean, I guess that's kind of where it's firstly where we were living at the time, and it's where we were when we were like 16 anyways. And the school that we shot the film in is the school that we went to.
All right.
So it's so like accurate to our lives. And some of the houses were like our parents' house, our grandma's house and stuff like that. So I mean, firstly, just practically, we had access to locations in London.
Yeah,
and it was just where it was natural to set it, because it's where a lot of that stuff did happen. So
that's pretty cool. Yeah. Again, it makes it very much more of a personal thing knowing that as well, knowing going through.
Yeah, it's super accurate.
And I grew up in Watford as well, so it wasn't one too far from London, but sort of it's a lot different to Wales. I'll tell you where I am now. Excellent. So again, Scarlett, you've brought personal experiences that you had to it as well. What was the most challenging part, the most challenging aspect of playing Maisie for you?
I mean, I possibly would say that it was staying positive sometimes when it can be such a like sad role, particularly like watching it back. And I'm a little bit older, so I feel like I'm watching someone younger and I'm like, oh, that's really hard. But when I was there living it, it can be hard not to take it personally all the time. I think that was the hardest thing. Cool.
I guess I know, you've got a good way of making everyone else feel bad now. So.
Luckily, Hilary and Anna were fantastic at keeping everyone's mood up and playing little game articulating all the time. I had a great time.
That's the thing, and that's what I think is hard about acting. I mean, I've only dabbled in it a little bit myself, so I'm not anywhere near what I'd love to have done. But most people I speak to who go into that find it really can draw a lot out of you, because you can get so immersed in what you're doing and the role that you're playing that it can be so difficult sometimes to actually separate and not go home with the same emotions. So what do you do to switch off?
All sorts, really.
Without going to a personal question, sorry.
I don't know. I guess just... I don't have an answer.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe I don't. Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah. Just don't switch off. You're constantly on.
Constantly.
Yeah.
When we were shooting, it was so intense. Like, the days are quite long, and then, like... I mean, we kind of wanted them to both look quite like scrappy all the time, and mm-hmm. But it's funny, on the bus scene, like, you guys both like hadn't showered or anything. It was really and I was thinking, like, probably you didn't have that much time to turn off between days, because it was like just on to the next. Yeah, obviously it was weekends, but
yeah, it was quite rushed, so yeah, it was quite.
probably were just like, oh my god, I'm tired, let's sleep.
Yeah. Oh, the bus scene was, yeah. I'd normally fall asleep at 9, literally, that's me, I'm done. So staying awake and trying to actually focus.
Because that was a night shoot, so we filmed literally from the sun going down to the sun rising. And wow. Like, we were pretty much on the bus for like at least 80% of that time, because we also shot the bit where she leaves the house. And yeah, that was like, just riding a bus for that long as well. It's just,
oh, you would, that would send you, because the smell of the fumes and everything, you just like nod off.
Gimpy especially was like going really car sick, because he had to be like facing backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nightmare. How long did it take you to film the whole thing? How long?
Yeah,
it was
shooting 3 weeks.
And then we had maybe like, yeah, a couple of days reshooting. The second scene that we did, the one where they bury the mouse, like we shot that quite a lot later, because we had like an initial edit of the whole film, and the second scene was originally like, yeah, we shot it in the main shoot, and then it was like, it just kind of wasn't really working, and I think we hadn't written it that well, and also we couldn't direct it because we'd written it like, it was like people walking down a canal.
We were trying to film it on a canal, but the canal was so thin nobody fit there, as well as camera and sound and Maisie and Isabel, Scott and Isabel. And like, so I remember just being like, well, I'm just going to hope this all works out because there's not space for me. So I literally like just can't really direct it. Yeah. And I like just put on a Marshall jacket to stop people walking down. It's just like not directing that scene. And then I was watching it back. I was like, I know there is a reason why I need to direct. I mean, you guys did a good job, but it's just like, you have to kind of have someone with that eye on all aspects to know that you've got them all aligning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then when you're like, we got it? I guess so.
I was just like, I hope they got it. Yeah.
We'll find out later on, yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing as well, especially when you're playing with light and you've got tight time schedules as well. I remember the one that I was only a featured extra in a film, but there was a scene where I got horrifically killed, apparently, at the end of it. Which is method acting, because I whacked my head on the concrete floor when I was doing it, and they were like, you didn't have to do that. And I said, I know I didn't, it was an accident. I've now got a splitting headache at 10 o'clock at night. But the lighting, so how hard was it? Obviously you've got your cinematographer and everyone there as well, so how hard was it to get your lighting right and make sure, because and rush that, because otherwise
we just had like LEDs and we literally had people holding them, so he'd just be like, you got LED, like yep, that's right, now stay there.
Yeah, the like catchphrase for our shoot was LEDs in bin bags,
because we just
like always been bagging up stuff to make it look like night, and then the LEDs, but like it was like really
super bad.
That's pretty decent, it doesn't look like that. So it just shows what you can make with the, when you've got, you know, haven't got a budget, you can make a proper feature film from it. So it doesn't, that's what I love about independent film, because you can just go out there. And I think, speaking to you guys now at the moment, you can see the passion all three of you have got for it and for the film itself. And I think that's what makes a film for me is far more valued sometimes than a big, massive, like, you know, £200 million Hollywood blockbuster, because there's much more of a, you've all put your soul into this, because you all, that's what you do. You know, Scarlett, you are an actor. This is what you want to do. This is what, you know, that's what you're passionate about. And you guys write it and direct it, and you want to see it succeed. You want to see it get out there on the screen. And as much as obviously people like, you know, I don't know, Ryan Reynolds, not that he's going to listen to Sumi, so, you know, they're great and that's what they want to do as well. But I think when you get to that level, it's not as, I don't think there's much passion in there. He's the wrong person, actually, because he did Deadpool, didn't he? And that was his passion. But you know what I'm getting at? This, when independent film is very much a passion project, and you see that on screen a lot more, and you can see the interactions from you guys, and you can, it just oozes out the screen. And for me, that's far more valuable than just any old big massive special effects. You've got, you know, you concentrate on the story. I really ramble, I'm sorry.
I mean, like, budget wise, like, because it was cinema, like, we were kind of involved in literally every aspect. We did like a lot of a lot of things ourselves that bigger budget films, like, you know, have the like director writer yeah. involved. So it did mean that like every decision, even down to like, you know, kind of things that would normally be quite technical, but they were still like just kind of overseen, well, done by us often.
Yeah.
And so
and you even did like the special effects, like
I just had that Zoom thing pop up then as well, if you did, sorry.
Like there were some things and we just messed up things like, oh, the, this time on this clock is wrong, and Hilary is like, right, I'll go in and fix every frame of that. Like, yeah, it's kind of funny you end up doing that, but yeah, we know the film far too well. Like, I think the amount of times we've watched it, I actually can't count anymore.
Yeah,
like I can't, I,
especially if you just if you could consider like frames of it, like not even just like beginning to end.
Yeah,
I mean, beginning to end a lot of times, but like the in between stages, you know, of adjusting scenes.
Or like just things where we had like, there's a scene where like Scarlett's typing and it's got like a green screen because we were going to replace the words later. And then like Hilary had to like edit the computer's like moving around, she has to like do all that stuff. And like, so it's like green every light single reflect. Frame, you have to like paint out the green light, and it's like, yeah, it's weird how well we know it. And sometimes I still, I'm like, oh, I'll watch it this time with people. But then you're like, I'm surprised I got through that one. I know like every single frame so well. Yeah.
Cool. Definitely a passion project for you there, because you've been it. I was going to ask a question, which, but I don't think is valid now, because I see how you, I was going to say, how, obviously, as sisters for you working together and writing together. How does that go? But you looking at you both, it's just, it sounds like it's great, but but as sisters, do you ever get that get that experience between?
Yeah, we was like it's funny because we live together as well, so it's like every kind of every day is pretty similar,
especially at the moment.
Oh, yeah, lockdown.
But yeah, I think it's really good because there's always, I think if I was doing it alone, I'd find it really difficult because there's so much, like, there's every day there's like something that goes wrong, I think. But, like, you just, sometimes you just feel like you're putting out fires a lot, and, or like, you know, you need someone to complain to. Or like, I just think doing it alone would be so hard.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need someone who has your back. Like, I think even if I didn't have Hilary, I'd want to be in like a duo or something. Just because, mm-hmm. I just don't understand if we do it alone. I'm like, how do you do it?
It's impressive. It's like this. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. There is so much to that. And obviously, you know, I mean, I think there was someone I interviewed once, and they were husband and wife. And they'd done their own independent film, and it was lovely. I mean, you know, they're ex-air stewardesses. He was an ex-crooner from Argentina. Quite good. But what you just said about having to do everything yourself, that's what they did, because they were, you know, they, the film was called The Remake, I think, but they're actually everything, even the actress, so like Scarlett, would have been involved in moving the set around because it was all in someone's house, like you said. So they were, every single person was, you know, the set, there was a set directors and everything in the set, and the props were all being moved around by everybody in the cast and having to be replaced as soon as they finished, and everyone was involved with it. And I think it's a nice thing. It's a great feeling to have then, and then seeing it on the big, seeing it on the screen and stuff. So, forgive my ignorance on this, but is this going to be on the big screen? Are we going to go see festivals? Is that how it's going to?
So we started Cinema Run, and we had planned to go to like, it was in London, and
we only got a couple of screenings, and we had like a whole cinema tour planned.
Yeah, and then lockdown.
Our first two, and then lockdown. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had a nice premiere at Prince of Charles in London, so that was really nice. And then we had another screening, and then, then the cinema shut down. So.
Yeah, the last screening we had was literally, like, on the day that everything was closing. It was, like, but, yeah, and those went really well. It was really nice, like...
It was a shame, because it felt like a really good kickoff, and, like, yeah, but, so we were pretty sad. But now it's out on VOD, so, at least everyone can see it now, so that's nice. Yeah.
That's very true. I'm sure you can probably get, you know, you can try and get that, maybe hopefully get that again. Once lockdown's finished, you can, you know, maybe try and get another set of screenings up there, because that'll be lovely.
one year anniversary or something, it would be quite fun.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. How are you finding lockdown? Scarlett as well, yourself obviously as an actor, how are you finding that? I'll just throw that in because it's 3 months
I mean, actually, luckily I'm not an actor currently, I'm a student again.
Oh, okay.
So for me it's not been too different from my life of sitting at my desk all day every day anyway. But it's, yeah, I'm quite ready to go out and do things now, I think.
Yeah, I've got to say, that's what working nights, apart from obviously my, you know, my lockdown haircut, which I did myself last week, if you couldn't at all. That
Well, I feel like I don't want to take full blame for this. I lopped off some random bits.
Yeah, I have got on my desk, I just have a pair of scissors, and it's like my thing that I do when I'm bored, I'm just like, see, up, go. It's like instead of browsing. So,
fair enough. Well, I got tired of my, I get a fringe and if it gets too long over the years and stuff, so I was like, right, Amazon clippers.
I'm just experimenting and seeing just how bad this can get before I actually touch it with anything.
Excellent. I mean, yeah, I was gonna say, for my job it's the same as yours, Scarlett, for sitting there, because I just sit in my study now and just look out the window when I'm working, or obviously working, but it's no different to what I do anyway. So it's, and I guess for you guys as well, it might be creative if you've been able to write some more. Is, have you found, obviously, you've probably been working really hard on this?
Yeah, because few weeks, especially, like, we were writing loads.
Yeah.
And we, like, it's nice being in the countryside as well, because we, there's such good walks around here, and we just go for, like, kind of writing walks.
You know what? They are.
They are.
Why did
yeah.
you?
I don't know.
We got not done on walks.
Yeah. No, it goes, like, no, it does work quite well, actually, because especially when you're, like, trying to, yeah, I don't know, it's quite good when you don't know quite what you're writing yet, and then you just talk about it the whole walk, and then when you come back, you're kind of ready.
Mm-hmm. It's best when we go for a walk, we've got a problem. I guess, like, if you write up until, and then you're like, I'm having a problem with this bit, let's go for a walk, and then by the time you come back, like, we've got so many things, so many ideas, so...
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Very nice and creative. Yeah, it's nice and creative walks. I mean, I'm 400 metres from the sea where I am, so I've got that luxury as well, where I can go out. So I do feel sorry for people who can't. I haven't got that. There's people, you know, who haven't got that luxury, but I can't. I'm not creative like that. I will go out and think, but I'm usually cycling with my son, so I've got him jabbering about Minecraft or something all the way, so I can't. You know, but it's nice to have that. I mean, that's part of, you know, lockdown is, I mean, there's various things that go through your mind. You can actually create a lot more, I think, and think. So it has had its benefits, I think, for that, as well as the huge downside, obviously, that cinemas are closed and everything. Almost creative arts are going, have just closed down, which is the biggest shame of all. Have you guys ever done theatre work at all in your time? Anything with theatre? No, okay.
I get terrible stage fright.
Do you?
Yes, awful. I don't know why films were fine, but it's just—I don't know how people get up there and do all those people.
I think that's the difference with a film, you know, because if you get it wrong, I think obviously when you've got the cameras, things you can redo it.
Yeah,
so I think when you're on stage, it can go horrible. I did it years ago, and it was, you know, if it goes wrong, it goes wrong. I was doing Macbeth and smoking a pipe, and the pipe's tobacco, this is in front of 300 children because it was school kids and I was at university, I bit the pipe and the tobacco flew out, and we were right in the middle of all these kids who then obviously end up burst out laughing, and there's us doing this really big, you know, very very Shakespearean detailed speech with all these teenagers wetting themselves laughing around you, because you just saw this thing just slowly fly out and go down. And then I sat on stage during the night guardsman, who's a comic character in a way, and I thought everyone was just laughing at the words that I was saying because it was quite comical. It wasn't. It was because I was wearing a nightdress, and I've never worn one before, and I didn't realise that I was just flashing basically to the entire... Luckily I had boxer shorts on, but you know, so things like that when you're in film, you can edit out and redo. when you're on stage, I can definitely get the stage fright bit, because it's just, you suddenly see all those people in front of you, and it's quite...
I think we really like as well, like, the level of control you can have with film. And, like, mm-hmm. I like being able to edit, like, to be like, I think you can just change something so much. And I think in theatre, you're just giving up so much.
And you can kind of do such subtle things with film as well. Like, it's like, oh, look, the way they move their eyes just then, like, makes this whole other, like, implies this whole other emotion.
Yeah.
And then it's like, in theatre, I feel like so much of that must be kind of lost. So you just have to kind of hope that it happens every night as well, isn't it?
Yeah. You hope that someone captures it.
Yeah.
But I like that. Especially when like an actor does something really nice, and they're like, I'm so glad I got that on camera. And then
yeah, some nice things just come.
You're like, that's lost forever.
Well, I guess the Maisie's first part of that film, then, you know, you're right, because if you're on stage, a lot of that could get missed, because it is a lot of facial expressions while you're doing the monologue going and everything like that, so things like that could get missed if you're on stage, whereas in film you can, like you just said, you can focus on her face and your facial expressions and the panic that sets in as he suddenly, you know, as a guy, he's turning around and things like that. It's like, oh, I've been there, I've done. Thankfully, when I was 16, obviously, you know, it's not, you're not classed as a stalker at that age. When you...
But it is. No, I think you can class Maisie as a stalker at that point.
Yeah, you probably could have. Yes. Actually, yeah, you're right. In that point of the story, I think, yeah, you genuinely were. But again, I mean, it's such a fun film to watch. As like we've mentioned a few times, the scene on the bus was great. The words coming out of the Ben when actually what he was thinking was completely different. And it's like, yeah, you know, it just, it's that typical teen of, I want to say this. What should I say? What should I say? Why? So, you know, it's just spot on. It really is. So I've got to say, it's a thoroughly enjoyable film to watch for that. You're welcome. I'm kind of running out now because I'm trying to think of things. So, have you got anything future planned for the next steps for this? Or for, obviously, now this one's over.
We're coming out of South Korea next month. That's what's happening with Soundtrack 16, which we got quite excited about because we really enjoyed seeing all the posters and stuff about that recently. And then, we're also working on our next film, which is... one adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing, mm-hmm. which is kind of it's similar to Soundtrack 16 in that it's like kind of teenagers and like coming of age, but we've used like all the Shakespearean dialogue, so it's kind of an interesting mesh of the two of them,
yeah.
Which I hope works.
But it's kind of very modern teen, but then also like deep Shakespeare, got some like tragic bits in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's we're kind of actually just finishing it up, the edit and stuff. So actually done. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did see the credits. That's what I was going to ask you as well, because I noticed in the film as well, there's very few adults in the film, and it's very centred, and it does draw us out. I picked on that one as well. There's obviously a few key characters or adults in there, but it's very central on the children themselves and that experience. And I thought that was a very good way of using that and utilising it as well, because, you know, of course, they could get drawn out as well, but you've definitely, you're keeping that focus on the young coming to age, the young people itself, and that was a really a powerful thing as well, I noticed. And I saw that in Much Ado as well, because when I saw what that was about, I was like, I gathered it might have something about Much Ado About Nothing, but I wasn't too sure from the reading the description. But I was thinking it seems to say the same sort of coming of age type.
And everyone else is kind of, I mean, I guess, they're like 20-ish.
I guess it's like the stage above, because they're kind of, well, the way we've done that is that they're like university students, and the guys who are usually like coming home from war, like coming home from a rugby match, and they're like all a rugby team. So it's like the stage above that. So it's like we've done school and now we're like university. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like doing things with people that age. I think it's quite fun, the coming of age.
I guess it's just what we know as well, because we're, I guess, recently young.
I'm looking forward to your quarter-life crisis film.
That's going to be the
third one.
Coming soon. Yeah.
Excellent. I mean, well, rugby is war, to be honest. It's very good to use that analogy. I said when I was in uni, we did the TA, and I wasn't in the rugby team, but I went to watch our rugby team with the University Officer Training Corps play and they played the paras, and three of them came off, three of our lads, not the paras, by the way, came off with broken arms, broken legs, because they didn't play rugby. They just thought kids and thought you jumped up little such and such and just and went straight for the students to just kick the hell out of them. So yeah, that put me off rugby quite a lot for many years afterwards.
I tried to do like the university, like I went to the kind of like taster thing that they do, you know, go for like a couple of weeks and then see if you want to join. And like my first session, I just got a concussion.
And the people which had cauliflower ear for a really long time. Like, I know I have cauliflower ear, and I was like, managed up, and I was like, long term rugby player.
I had a ringing ear, but I mean, it's probably just, gosh.
Yeah, it kind of things like that do.
No, I didn't do that, but yeah.
like, why are people so bad at rugby and stuff? No, there's not actually no one playing rugby. there's kind of like a running theme that everyone in the film is bad at sports. Kind of like a joke, but I hope it comes across that way.
Excellent, excellent. How about you, Scarlett? What, have you got anything planned? Obviously, you're a student now at the moment, but.
Yeah, so studies for at least the next 3 years.
Lovely.
And we'll see what happens after.
Excellent, excellent. What are you studying, can I ask?
Medicine. So.
Oh, wow.
Very topical.
Yes, yeah, very topical at the moment. Yeah. Are you sure you still want to study after seeing what's coming?
Well, ask me again in September when I start on the wards.
Oh my god!
Yeah, no, well done. Thank you for that. It's a really good profession, obviously, to go into. So yeah, good luck with that. That's it's really good.
Mario, I'll sort out that cauliflower ear.
Excellent. So I wrap this up. There's one question I'm going to ask you, because this is a signature question of mine. It's got nothing to do with film. It's got nothing to do with anything. It actually came to me because one of my guests used to work. He was in Star Wars, but he's worked with Jim Henson for 30 years, you know, the Muppets and stuff. So you're going to tell me now, you'd be too young to actually remember any of these, but if you could have a Muppet created after you, what Muppet would it be and why? It's a great personality question. Until you turn around and say, I don't know what the Muppets are.
I saw Muppets Christmas Carol, but I think that's it.
God, do you want to begin this one? You take it then. I haven't seen any Muppets.
I think fittingly, I'd probably have a very Christmassy Muppet.
Okay.
Because I'm quite a Christmassy person. I was a Christmas elf for a few years during the acting career, and I loved it. So,
What, sorry?
Pig Muppet.
Oh, okay. Pig Muppet? Like Miss Piggy, like Miss Piggy type thing, yeah.
I know there's a frog Muppet, but I don't think I'm a frog Muppet. Maybe I'm a green Muppet.
That's Kermit, right?
That's Kermit, yeah.
That's like the main Muppet.
It is, yeah, Kermit frog.
You know what? I don't think it's Muppet, but do you know that like big yellow bird?
Oh, Big Bird.
Sesame Street.
So, yeah.
That one, is that a Muppet?
Well, same sort of thing, yeah. Oh, gosh. I was going to say, the Muppets Christmas Carol, actually, surprisingly, is one of the most accurate Dickens versions of a Christmas Carol as well. It's very, very true to the original novel, which is strange considering it's a frog and an alien with a big nose and rats and stuff doing it. But
it's become a tradition in our house anyway.
Oh, yeah, it is a massive family tradition. I can't believe you two haven't seen one of the Muppets, no.
My boyfriend would be outraged. He almost, like, split up with me when I hadn't watched it.
Oh, that's terrible. But yeah, before I wrap this, is there anything you guys would like to say to people who are listening or watching about maybe how...
Yeah, gotta watch the film. Soundtrack to 16.
Soundtrack 16, it's on all the platforms.
In the UK?
In the UK. Do you want me to list them?
I'll list them.
Yep, go.
Microsoft, Crystal, Google Play, YouTube,
iTunes. I think there's one more.
Yeah, there is.
You find it.
Yeah. Cool. Scarlett, anything you'd like to say?
I guess thank you for people who do watch it and have watched it or supported it.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And thank you for having us.
No, thank you for being on. Thank you.